What would you do if in a single day, perhaps in a single moment, got everything you ever wanted? One of my favorite movies is Fiddler on the Roof, and it's just such a great movie for so many reasons, but there's this one classic song of If I Were a Rich Man, sung by the protagonist, Tevier, and he dreams of what life would be if he had everything he wanted, mostly in reference to wealth. He'd have a big, tall house in the middle of a town, long staircases, a yard full of geese and chickens, and also he wanted the opportunity to study the books of the Bible for 7 hours out of every day. And I'm pretty sure we've all had similar fantasies where we imagine how different life would be if we had everything we wanted. Maybe we'd get to travel and see the world in places we never got the opportunity to see. Maybe we'd want to spend more time in our hobbies or give more money to charity and to the church. Maybe we'd want something as simple as time. Without the need to work, we could focus more time on whatever we wanted. But of course, we often see the negative effects in life when people do get exactly what they want, especially in reference to money. We've all heard horror stories about people who win the lottery, especially when it's in reference to tens of millions of dollars. It often destroys their marriage, it destroys their relationship with their children and their friends. We also know that when sports players, especially professional athletes, get what they want, they can't seem to hold on to it. According to one article, 35% of NFL players are either bankrupt or either under financial distress within 2 years of their retirement. And an estimated 60% of NBA players go bankrupt within 5 years of leaving their sport. But let's imagine, what would happen to us? What kind of people would we be if God gave us in a single day everything we ever wanted? Would we change? Would we grow? Would we grow more in God, or would we grow apart from God? In the film Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, I think this is a movie we've all seen, kind of wacky, kind of disturbing in some places, but overall it's a good film. At the very end, Willy Wonka says something to Charlie that always bothered me, even as a kid. After Charlie proved himself to be more noble than all the other children who received the golden ticket and winning the rights to the factory, Willy Wonka kneels down to Charlie and says, "Now, Charlie, don't forget what happened to the man who suddenly got everything he always wanted. He lived happily ever after." And even as a child, that really didn't sit right with me, because I knew, even from, you know, the little experiences I had, that wasn't always the case. That's why Jesus says in Matthew chapter 19, verse 24, it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter into heaven. However, we do find one case in Scripture where there is a man who got everything he could possibly want, and he was still faithful to God in spite of everything he had, and that man was Joseph. If you will turn with me to Genesis chapter 41. Genesis chapter 41. We've been following the life of Joseph from when he was captured by his brothers and sold into slavery. And now, as of Genesis chapter 41, he is at the age of 30. So 13 years have passed, and he has served as both a slave and a prisoner. Now, as he is in prison, the Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, has a dream. Read with me Genesis chapter 41, verses 1 through 4. "Now it happened at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream, and behold, he was standing by the Nile. And lo, from the Nile there came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed in the marsh grass. Then behold, 7 other cows came up from the Nile, ugly and gaunt, and they stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. The ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 sleek and fat cows. Then Pharaoh awoke." Now, in this very disturbing dream, Pharaoh sees 7 cows come out of the Nile. Now, as a child, when I read that, I thought the Nile somehow spawned these cows. But we know that in ancient Egypt, the cows would submerge themselves up to their necks to simply get away from the heat, to relax, to protect themselves from the bugs. And so this is probably like any other day. Pharaoh is out watching the Nile, and 7 cows come out like they normally do. And when they come out, Pharaoh sees that these are extremely healthy. They're very fat. They're very good looking. They're the kind of cows you would want to have. And they go and they graze in the marsh as they would normally do. Now, as Pharaoh is watching these seven cows, seven more cows come out of the Nile, and these are just the opposite. They're ugly and gaunt. That is, they're super skinny. In fact, he probably saw the bones of the cows wanting to protrude out of the skin. If you've ever seen a large animal that has not been taken care of, it is not a pretty sight. And as we see in verse 19, Pharaoh later says that this is the ugliest thing that he has seen in all of Egypt. Now, if these cows are so sickly and so skinny, what do they need to do? They need to go down and eat some of the vegetation, put some meat on their bones. Well, they go down to eat, and they start eating the other cows. Now, this is not something cows normally do. Now, talk about mad cow disease. Anyway, they go and they... It's not really pleasant to think of. They eat these other cows. And as we see in verse 21, these cows look the same as they did before. You would think if you ate something that basically made up your entire body weight, it would show at least a little. But it doesn't with these cows. And Pharaoh is so disturbed that he wakes up and he tries to go back to sleep. Read with me verses 5 through 8. Then he fell asleep and dreamed a second time, and behold, seven ears of grain came up from a single stalk, plump and good. And then behold, seven ears, thin and scorched by the east wind, sprouted up after them. Then the seven ears swallowed up the seven plump and full ears. Then Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. Now in the morning his spirit was troubled, so he sent and called for the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them for Pharaoh. Now in this dream he sees a stalk of grain, and it produces seven ears of grain. Now I think we all know that when you grow grain, each stalk has a single ear. That's what is normal. But what he sees is something unusual. He sees a single stalk producing seven ears. Now, this is extremely unusual. I'm sure, you know, due to some genetic deformity, it is possible for them to produce maybe two or three on a rare occasion. But what he is seeing is something that would not exist for roughly 5,000 years. Only with the ability of modern technology are engineers able to actually engineer a grain that will produce this many ears per stalk. So what he has seen is truly unique, and it's not a bad thing, it's a good thing. If everyone in Egypt could grow grain like that, they would be even more wealthy than they already were. But as he's watching this grain, seven other ears of grain appear, and they're ugly, and they're scorched by the east wind, and they eat up the other grain. Now, unfortunately, I can imagine cows eating other cows. I can't really imagine grain eating other grain, but nonetheless, that's what he dreams. And he awakes, and he is again disturbed by this dream. And when we see something else play out, we see a similar story play out. Someone important has a disturbing dream, and there's no interpreter found. We saw this with the cupbearer and with the baker. We saw this with Nebuchadnezzar. Now we're seeing this with Pharaoh. And they run into this issue. They can't find an interpreter. Remember, these dreams were seen as glimpses into the future. They were often seen as messages from the gods. And it is true, in Scripture, the God of the Bible did often reveal himself in dreams to people, or to he would reveal what would take place in later days. Now, thankfully, the cupbearer speaks up. Read with me verses 9 through 13. Then the chief cupbearer spoke to Pharaoh, saying, I would make mention today of my own offenses. Pharaoh was furious with his servants, and he put me in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard, both me and the chief baker. We had a dream on the same night, he and I. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now, a Hebrew youth was with us there, a servant of the captain of the bodyguard. And we related them to him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each he interpreted according to his own dream. But just as he interpreted for us, so it happened. He restored me in my office, but he hanged him, that is, the baker. Now, I think we can beat up the cupbearer just a little bit, because as we saw in verse 1 of this chapter, he did forget about Joseph for 2 years, so that's not a very nice thing to do. He owed Joseph a favor. He was supposed to talk him up before the king so the king would get him out of prison. Unfortunately, he forgets about Joseph, but he does something here that is quite noble. And notice what he says. He's bringing up some pretty bad memories. In verse 9, he says, I would make mention of my offenses. Remember, 2 years ago, the cupbearer was thrown into prison for upsetting Pharaoh. If I had made the leader of any nation that upset to where they threw me into prison, that's something I'm probably not going to bring up, especially if they decided to let me out. But the cupbearer realizes that if he brings up this bad memory, although it may be a little risky, it might benefit Pharaoh, and he cares for him. Now, I think this is a good attitude for anyone to have. You know, I think we need to ask ourselves, is this an attitude we have? Do we have the bravery and the love for other people to talk about our own negative expenses and our own mistakes of falling short? Because often when we do, they benefit other people, such as this case. Now, often when we have the bravery to talk about our own flaws, our negative experiences, they benefit other people. Often people feel very alone with their struggles. They feel like they're the only person in the world dealing with their own problems. But when you talk about yours, they realize they're not so alone. And often when we talk about our mistakes and our past, we often with that give advice on how we overcame. And this can encourage other people and give them advice on how they should proceed. And the cupbearer is bold enough to talk about his own past mistakes in hope of benefiting Pharaoh. And it will. As we see in verse 14, Joseph is called for. Now, can you imagine Joseph? Joseph woke up in prison like he would any other day of the week with no hope of getting out. And all of a sudden, the king wants to see him. Now, this doesn't mean, from Joseph's perspective, this doesn't mean he's getting out. All he knows is he's going to see the king. Little did he realize this would be the last time he spent a day in a prison cell. Now, he is called before the king, and I think we know we can't just show up before the king, especially dressed like a prisoner. So he's given new clothes, and his face is shaven. Now, Egyptians often shaved their faces. They were clean-shaven individuals, at least usually. This could be the first shave he has had in 2 years. Now, also keep in mind he is a Hebrew. If he was not required to shave his face in the house of Potiphar, this could be the first shave he has ever had in his entire life. That could be the case. Now, Joseph, as we see, is brought before Pharaoh. Notice what Pharaoh says in verse 15. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, but no one can interpret it. And I have heard it said about you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. If Joseph ever needed to brag any time in his life, it would be now. Remember, he is a prisoner, he is a slave. If he wanted to get free from that, he needs to prove himself that he is valuable before Pharaoh. Yet he still remains humble. Notice what it says in verse 16. Joseph then answered Pharaoh, saying, It is not me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. And so Joseph is humble before Pharaoh, and Pharaoh gives him the dream, talking about the seven good cows, the seven bad cows, the seven good grain, and the seven bad grain. And Joseph hears the dream, and God gives him the interpretation. Notice what he says in verses 26 and 29. He says, these dreams are one in the same. The seven good cows and the seven good ears of grain both represent 7 years of abundance, 7 years of prosperity. And things are going to go well with Egypt for a period of 7 years. But unfortunately, as we see in verse 27, there is a flip side to both of these dreams. While the seven good ears and the seven good cows represent good things, the seven bad cows and the seven bad ears represent 7 years of famine. And this famine is going to be absolutely terrible. Read with me verses 31 and 32. Joseph says, So the abundance will be unknown in the land because of that subsequent famine, for it will be very severe. Now, as for the repeating of the dream to Pharaoh twice, it means that, read verse 30. I skipped ahead a little too far. Verse 30. After them, 7 years of famine will come, and the abundance will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will ravage the land. Now notice what Joseph is saying. This famine is going to be so bad, it's going to be like these good years never happened in the first place. Now Joseph says in verse 32 that because these dreams were dreamed together in the same night, it represents two things. One, God has determined to bring this about, and two, it is coming quickly. Now, as we see in verses 33 through 36, Joseph gives some advice, perhaps unsolicited advice to Pharaoh. Nonetheless, it's something that needs to hear. Joseph, being led by God, knows exactly what Egypt needs to do. In verse 33, he says that Pharaoh needs to appoint a strong, wise, and influential leader to deal with this problem. It can't be someone flippant, it can't be someone unwise, it can't be someone foolish. It has to be someone who is going to deal with this situation in a wise way. As we see in verses 34 through 35, this is an issue that cannot be handled by one man. There needs to be overseers set over all of Egypt to deal with this problem, to ensure that at least 20% or one-fifth of all of Egypt's grain is collected every year during these years of prosperity, so Egypt will not fall by the famine. And there's a lot of practical advice here. There's a lot of people, especially in the United States, who have the idea that if things are good in their life, if they had a good week at work or a good month, maybe even a good year, and they're making a little extra money, they need to spend it. They need to maybe buy a few extra toys, maybe get a new car when they don't need it, or buy a new house when they don't need it. And that's not always a bad thing. If you are blessed with a lot of money, it's okay to enjoy what you're able to. But there's also this idea that we find throughout Scripture, especially here, that bad years come. And maybe what God is blessing you with, maybe that little extra money is not for a new car or a new boat. Maybe he's preparing you now so that when a bad time comes, you won't suffer as much. And that's certainly what Joseph is doing. Of course, Joseph is privileged to know when the good years are coming and when the bad years are coming. We don't always know that. So when we have a good week or a good month or a good year, I think we need to take advantage of that. So when difficult times come, we've been prepared, or we have prepared for this time. I have a friend, actually, whose entire industry was destroyed by the coronavirus. He lives in Chicago, and he said when he first heard news of it, he thought maybe it could turn out to be nothing, but maybe it could turn out to be really bad. And so when he first heard news of it several months ago, he started storing up as much money as he could. And now, even though his industry is destroyed, he has 6 months of savings saved up. So hopefully by that time, he can go back to work. But he basically took Joseph's advice. He took advantage while things were good, and he made the most of it. Now, notice verses 37 through 45. Pharaoh and his servants basically hear what Joseph has to say. It seems good to them. And Pharaoh says, basically, you have the job. And just like that, with a few spoken words from the most powerful man in the world, Joseph is no longer a slave. Joseph is no longer a prisoner. Now, if I was Joseph being 13 years a slave, I would probably be bawling my eyes out. Of course, you know, you have to compose yourself before the king, but if I was given my freedom, I would be so overwhelmed with joy. Joseph may be overwhelmed with shock, not know what to say, because not only is he given his freedom, which is more than anyone can ask for, he is given, as we see in verse 40, authority over the entire house of Pharaoh. Perhaps even his entire estate, everything he owns belongs to Joseph. We see in verse 41, he's given authority over the entire land of Egypt. Now, Egypt at this time was one of, if not the most powerful nation on earth. At the very least, it was an economically prosperous nation. And now Joseph is in charge, second to Pharaoh. And we see the extent of his authority in verse 44. It says that no one will be able to lift a hand or a foot without the permission of Joseph. And he is honored again and again. In verse 42, we see he is given new clothes. He's given a signet ring. Now, this signet ring is very special. In ancient times, and even in the recent past, several hundred years ago, people would wear signet rings, and that's basically how they sign documents. Basically, what he could do with this signet ring, with the signet ring that belonged to Pharaoh, was sign any document in Pharaoh's name. And basically, he had the entire authority of Pharaoh in his hand. He is also given fine linen and a gold necklace or collar, demonstrating that he is honored, that he is a special individual. And Pharaoh wants everyone in Egypt to know how special Joseph is. Notice what it says in verse 43. Pharaoh parades him through the streets of Egypt in his chariot, or in his second chariot. And he does this for two reasons. One, he wants everyone to know how special Joseph is, and to know that he is in charge. And second, to bow the knee to him, to give him respect. Now, keep in mind, this is a time before TV, before the news, before the newspaper, before the internet. If you wanted to let someone know that there was an important official or someone who just came to an important office, you literally had to show them. And that's exactly what he is doing. He is parading him through the streets of Egypt so everyone can see and appreciate Joseph. Of course, we also see this in 1 Kings chapter 1. With Solomon. David wants everyone to know there is no dispute on who the king is. So he takes Solomon, places him on his mule, and he parades him through the streets of Jerusalem so everyone knows that Solomon is in charge. And everyone will know that Joseph is in charge, second only to Pharaoh. Not only that, he is also, as we see in verse 45, given a wife. Now, after 13 years a slave, he's able to settle down and have a family. She is the daughter of the priest of On, the priest of Ra, the sun god, one of the greatest gods in Egyptian mythology. Now, as we see in Old Testament scriptures, it's not always the ideal of marrying someone who is a pagan. Pharaoh has ordained this, so I'm not sure how much choice Joseph actually has. Nonetheless, being married into this kind of family is going to give him even more prestige and influence. And hopefully, the story of Asenath, his wife, would turn out the same way it did for Rahab or Ruth. Being influenced by the people of God, they converted to the faith, and hopefully the same thing will happen to her. And Joseph, as we see in verses 46 through 49, did well as a servant of Pharaoh. He gathered so much grain, it was as the sand of the seashore. In fact, the text says that they kept counting and kept keeping record until there was so much they could not count it anymore. Now, of course, the reason he's doing so well is because God is with him. God may have even used his providence to ensure to ensure Joseph would be good at this job. According to the Brooklyn Papyrus that was discovered, it showed that the Egyptian prison system was closely related to their Bureau of Labor or Agriculture. That's basically what we would call it. Basically, they use the prison system in their agriculture and in their labor force. So perhaps, I don't want to say this this is 100%, but perhaps based off that information, maybe one of the reasons that God allowed Joseph to enter into prison in the first place was to prepare him for this very important work, an important work that would not only save the lives of the Egyptians, but the lives of everyone in the ancient Near East. And if that's so, that further demonstrates the providence of God. Nonetheless, we still see God's providence demonstrated in the entire story. Now, why was Joseph chosen for such a privileged position? Well, because Pharaoh could see God in the life of Joseph. And notice what Pharaoh says in verse 38. Can we find a man like this in whom is a divine spirit? And there is a principle here for us as Christians today. You know, do the people of this world see God in our own lives? Now, of course, God is probably not going to give us the ability to interpret dreams or to turn walking sticks into snakes, thankfully, or give us the ability to heal people or to see the future. But nonetheless, the people of the world should be able to see the influence of God in our own lives. And this is exactly what Jesus expected of his followers. As we see in Matthew chapter 5, verse 16, he says, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." And people should be able to tell that God is working in our lives, that we are influenced by his word and his teachings by the way we live our life, by the way we go the extra mile for other people, by the way we not only do what is required of us, but we do a little bit more, by the way that we sacrifice our needs and our desires for other people, and by the way we are fearless in times of trials, whether it's a situation like the coronavirus or whether it's our own personal issues or sickness or even in the face of our own death. People should be able to see the influence of God in our lives, and Pharaoh certainly did for Joseph. Now, one of the last things I want us to focus on is this idea that Joseph did not forsake God, no matter what situation he found himself in. Now, unfortunately, many people turn from God when things are difficult, when they're faced with difficult trials. And I've known Christians who were faithful for a time, then when their life became difficult, they turned away. And unfortunately, I think we all know people like this. Jesus talks about these individuals in Matthew chapter 13, verse 21. He talks about them being a stony soil. Basically, they receive the word of God for a moment. I'll read it, Matthew 13, 21. He says, "Yet he has," talking about the one who is sown on stony ground, "he has, yet he has no firm root in himself, but is only temporary. And when the affliction or persecution arises because of the word," that is because of the gospel, "he immediately falls away." Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who come to God only when it is convenient. But when the difficulties of life arise, they fall away. But Joseph was not like this. Even in his darkest hours, he held on to God. And Joseph also did not forsake God when things became easy. For some reason, some people are the opposite. When things are difficult, they hold on to God because they realize he's the only one who can help them through. But it's when things get easy, do they slack in their faith? Jesus also talks about these individuals in Matthew chapter 13, verse 22. He talks about the individuals who are choked by the thorns of the world. And he talks about these thorns being the worry of the world and the deceitfulness of wealth. Both extremes, suffering and luxury, difficulty and ease, can provide difficult temptations for the Christian. But Joseph was able to master both. Let me point out one verse right quick. Proverbs chapter 30, verse 8. Proverbs chapter 30, verse 8. Agar had an interesting perspective in reference to difficulty and ease and suffering and luxury. He says in Proverbs 30, verse 8, he says, "Give me neither poverty nor riches." And in verse 9, he says, "Why? That I may not be full and deny you and say, 'Who is the Lord?' Or that I may not be in want and steal and profane the name of my God." Agar prays a prayer that most people don't pray. He prays, "Well, God, don't give me too much, and God, don't give me too little. Give me a happy medium," you might say. Because he knew that when things are really good, people tend to forget about God. They lean more on the riches and the comforts of life. But when things are difficult, greater temptation is there. He thought that perhaps God might give him too little and he might be tempted to steal and therefore profane or sin against God. But Joseph was able to master both times of great difficulty and times of great luxury. And we see this in the naming of his sons in verse 50. Joseph is blessed with two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And you probably notice in your Old Testament studies that there isn't a tribe of Joseph. All the tribes of Israel are named after the sons of Israel. Well, Joseph doesn't have a tribe by name, but his tribe or his portion is represented by his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. And their descendants make up two half tribes. Now notice what he names his son in verse 51, Manasseh. And Manasseh means something very interesting. It means making to forget. I don't think we've ever sat down thinking of the names of our kids and said, "I want to name my child Forgetfulness." But that's what he's doing with Manasseh, and this is why he says, "For God has made me forget all my troubles and all my father's household." God was so good to Joseph that Joseph was able to focus on the good things that he had been blessed with, and he was able to forget all the difficulties in his father's house, being hated by his brothers and being sold into slavery. Unfortunately, a lot of people, even though they're blessed with good things, they still want to hold on to the past. They still want to hold on to the difficulties and the negative experience instead of moving on and enjoying what God has blessed him with. But Joseph did not have this problem. He also attributed all his blessings to God. And we see that in the naming of his son Ephraim, meaning fruitfulness, where he says, "God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction." And I hope that we live the way that Joseph lived, where we live in such a way where our faith, our walk with God, is not affected by external things, where it is not affected by the things of this world, where it's not affected by how easy or how difficult life is. And that is an attitude that takes time to cultivate. I think it's something we're all working on. But if we want to cultivate the attitude that Joseph had, it begins today. It begins us today being the kind of Christian God expects us to be, by having an attitude that is unaffected by the things of the world. So when we start working on this attitude now, we focus on the things of God. When times of difficulty or times of great blessings occur, we will be prepared and live like Joseph. When things are good, we will not forsake God. And when things are difficult, we will not turn our back on God. And I hope this is something we are all striving for in our walk with God. Now, before we close today, if there's anyone here who realizes that you're not living up to the standard that Joseph set, that we read of in the Bible, and you realize that you do not have the attitude that Joseph had, that you let the things of this life, whether good or bad, affect your walk with God. And if that's the case, we would be glad to pray for you. And God certainly will forgive you and help you be the kind of person you need to be. And if you're here today and you simply need prayers of encouragement, perhaps you've had trials similar to what Joseph experienced, well, we'd be glad to pray for you. And we know from reading the story of Joseph, God will help you along your journey the same way, using his providence and his sovereignty to guide the gears and the wheels of life in your favor. If there's anything we can do for you spiritually, please come forward as we stand and sing.